I hope you all have some wonderful carbs in front of you. Carbs, right? Carbs help. Caffeine. It's like the trinity of the table. Carbs, caffeine, and what's the other C? I can't think of it this early. Obviously, I need more caffeine myself. And you're by yourself. You should come sit with Mike.
Yeah.
So we for the next 45 to 50 minutes, want to really engage you all in a conversation. This is not going to be a formal presentation. You're not going to get to hear us stand up here and talk about all kinds of really cool things that we're doing. I am going to introduce myself and what we're doing in just a second. But really, I just want to set the stage here that this is about where you all, your organizations, you think that we need to go as a community, as a country, to advance well-being. So we're going to get out there. We're going to ask you to do some things that are going to feel a little uncomfortable. We're going to get kind of big in our thinking. But the end goal here is that we have something that we can take away and we can learn from. And so I'll get to that in just a second. So my name is Ben Miller. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer for Wellbeing Trust. And we have Ashley Hill, who's our executive fellow. She's gonna be helping me out today. And if you're not familiar with Wellbeing Trust, we're a relatively new foundation. We're about a year old, a little over a year old. We were started as a gift by the Providence St. Joseph Health System that decided that they wanted to invest in advancing mental health and wellness in this country. So they created us. So we're an independent 501c3. And most of the work that we're doing now in this country is really, we're trying to advance mental health, social health, and spiritual health. And we do it in a variety of different domains, which I won't bore you with this morning. But one of our key signature initiatives is what we're about to do with you. And you're our first. So I have to say, like, this could be really awkward. It could be like your first middle school dance. Everybody just kind of stares at each other and nobody wants to stand up. But we are doing this in 10 other places across the country. We call these well-being legacy dialogues. Legacy. Think about this for a second. You have a legacy. You inherited a legacy. But what we want to do with you today is to really think through how we can begin to create a legacy of well-being for the next generation. Intergenerational is a word we'll use a lot, but it actually plays a pretty significant role here. Because the decisions that you all make now as individuals, as professionals for your organization, even as a member of your family, will have an impact on somebody else. You may not necessarily recognize that. It's the ripple effect. Okay, but you're standing on someone else's shoulders. You're standing on their decisions, whether they were good or bad. And you hopefully, in turn, build off of that to establish something that's a lot more effective for what you're trying to achieve when it comes to well-being. So we're going to walk through a few slides here, and then I'm going to stop talking because I want you all to talk more. But let me just say a couple of things. Here's our objectives. So we make it seem like it's a formal presentation, but it's not. But it's always helpful to see kind of where we're trying to go here. We really want to get from you information today. You represent a unique group. We're not talking to anybody else like you. We have a team in Atlanta today that's talking to another group of folks, but they're not like you. And so, as I said, we're doing this 10 times, but the goal of doing this 10 times with 10 separate groups is because we think that what you're going to bring forward with information is so uniquely different that when we put it all together, it actually makes something coherent and cohesive. And I'll tell you what that, hopefully that is in a second. Okay, what is well-being legacy? Well, essentially, you can see here on the slide, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create some type of what we call responsible roadmap or a living agenda that gives us a way to begin to prioritize how we invest resources, how we change our practices, and then how we move towards changing our policies in service to advancing overall well-being. That sounds like a mouthful, right? Well, a lot of people have been in this space for some time. Folks have been out there standing on stages like this, inspiring the masses on how we need to create a culture of well-being, and we will continue to do that. What we want to do, though, as an organization is we want to take it to the next level. And we want to be able to say, how can we start to think about collectively prioritizing how we're going to spend our resources, how we're literally going to look at the policies, and then how we're going to look at what we do in service to overall well-being. On your table, you have a really nice handout that Ashley and others put together. And it walks you through kind of what this initiative is. And so I'm not going to read this to you because this, I think, we iterated this multiple times. If you look on the front obviously gives you an overview of what it is and who we are and all that other good stuff. But on the back is actually the key. I think everybody's got it. If you don't have it, raise your hand and we'll get it for you. We believe that based on the evidence and based on a lot of work from smart people like you, that there are seven vital conditions that go into overall well-being. And these vital conditions, oh, we got a hand, there we go, are listed on the back here next to your kind of quintessential clip art, and you can see that. And we want to understand a little bit more about these vital conditions and how you as, you know, individuals, but also representing organizations, can start to pursue some of these vital conditions within your own world. Now we'll talk about that again in just a second. But before we do, we're gonna have you do two exercises today. Nothing, you know, wild. I promise I'm not gonna make people stand up and dance or anything like that. You probably did that yesterday at the opening session, right, Mike? This is really just about, definitions. We believe as an organization that language changes culture. And it's really important as we move forward together in our understanding of well-being that we have some consistent understanding of what well-being actually is. So we wanted just to kind of take 5 minutes amongst your table, time to get more coffee and carbs, and I'll think about others, see while we do this. And I want you to describe and define what well-being is to you and to your organization. Now, I realize that some of this could be relatively simple. Others of it may be a little bit more complex, but we want you just to take a minute and talk to your table about this. What is well-being? What comes to mind when you hear that? And then most importantly for us too, what does intergenerational mean to you? I gave you a little hints about that earlier, but as an organization or as a person in the context of your family or your community, what is intergenerational? So just take a couple of minutes, let me give you like 3 to 5, talk to your, introduce yourself first, be kind. Of course, you probably sit next to the people you know, it's too early. Yeah, and then just take about 5 minutes, and then we're gonna ask you to kind of report out. So if you wanna have one person that just says, hey, this is what, you know, the dominant theme was, or if you wanna have 12 people say it, it doesn't matter. We just wanna hear from you. So take about 5 minutes, drink some coffee, and define for us and help us understand, what do you think about when you hear these words? Okay, sorry to make you stop. I can tell that there's some enthusiasm about this topic, so I appreciate you getting us going good this morning. All right, we're gonna start with this table back here because they're still talking, and this is a good skill for facilitators. You always go to the table that's still talking because then it'll get them to stop talking. Okay, you guys are pretty passionate about this, so can you just, lots of coffee. I still couldn't think of the third C. Who wants to tell us a little bit about what you learned? You got notes.
I took some notes, so, okay. Good morning, everyone. I'm Robin Bouvier from Aon. I just learned this morning that I'm here representing your member organization, the Rhode Island Business Group on Health. I'm the chair of their Health and Productivity Committee. I did not know they were a member. Just found out, so glad to be here representing the smallest state in the country. We came up with a lot of ideas. So well-being is being able to feel good and do what I need to do every day was where we started. But then we started really building onto that. It's that feeling of flow that we heard about from Kara yesterday, feeling a sense of contentment or satisfaction with both your work life and your home life, feeling a sense of peace, having the resources that you need to bring your best self to every moment, an environment who supports who you are in that moment, having a sense of community connection, energy, environment, and culture that make you feel welcome, make you feel that sense of inclusion, but also having the discipline, the balance in your life, the ability to prioritize or focus on the things that are most important, feeling in control and having self-efficacy, empowerment, some sense of reciprocation where there's a giving and a receiving, believing in something, you may or may not call that spirituality, but feeling that sense of belonging and inclusion to something a sense of purpose, and then really being integrated in the community so it impacts not only the workplace, the homes, but the communities where you live also.
Thank you.
Sure.
Wonderful way to start. I'm going to go over here. What can you all add to what was just said?
I love how you point. Should I point it to you?
Okay. I'm Laura with My Shapers. Our team was focusing in on it's beyond numbers, and that the self-insured employers are able to have more influence on what will help them and be healthier. We were looking more at the 20,000 foot level about how well-being needs to be encompassing more than just the physical health, the mental, the spiritual, financial. And then we were looking at the intergenerational as either whether it's within someone's family or within how we can serve older and younger. We were talking about ways that independent living and some daycare children coming together, so it helps both of them have roles and responsibilities. Anything else I missed? Oh, he's got a great grid thing here.
So we talked about, again, the physical, emotional, spiritual, social, and financial needs going down one axis, and then the intergenerational going around the X axis, and how do you design programs for all of those?
How do you design programs for all of those?
Yeah,
5 more minutes. All right, who wants to report out over here?
Then Nancy summed it up for our table. She got here late, didn't hear the question, but has the answer. So I think that's the gold mine right there. And she's right.
Right table?
She said it was a skill, and it's a skill when learned, just needs to be applied. And I think that's a dollar's worth.
The other thing we talked about is individual choice. Our conversation was less about policy or program or kind of institutional forcing, as it would, and rather the individual really needs to have that desire, that motivation to want to be different. How do you balance information, education, et cetera, with individual will?
That's a great point. Great point. Yeah, please.
John had what I thought was a really great comment. He said it's hope. When you live with well-being, there's hope for you.
Hope. That's very good. Okay, what about you guys? You learn so much about a group when you do this exercise. Everybody points to the other person.
I would just focus on the intergenerational, which I think is, the decisions that we all make today have a true impact on next generation. And decisions that were made by our parents and kind of grandparents have impact on us. And I think that everything that we kind of are talking about today, we just got to get it in the hands of younger generations as soon as we can apply it to them. So, and that's relevant for workplaces, supporting kids of their employees. That's kind of the true meaning of intergenerational. It's got to be, legacy. That's how you build it.
Okay, last but not least.
So on our side of it, for well-being, I think a word that hasn't been mentioned yet was experience, that well-being is really an experience. It's not just, I heard balance before as well. The financial, the physical, the spiritual, the emotional coming together, it's an experience. It's an experience of a positive state of being is what we talked about. And for intergenerational, we kind of took it a couple different ways. Mike looked at it kind of, again, past and future going forward. We also had some commentary around just more the global look at intergenerationalism as well. It's not just about here in Dallas or here in the U.S. It's also how do we approach it as a planet, as a world.
Okay, you guys get A+. That was wonderful. That's a great place to start. Thank you for that. We're going to do another exercise. Let me call up the Oh, sorry, guys. I waited till you took a bite, too.
Yes. Basically, we just talked about, we're just glad now that
and he joined us a little late, so it's just Danita and myself, that we're glad we're talking more about well-being, you know, not just physical and mental and all that. So basically I agree with what everyone else has said, but just glad we're in that space now where it's more encompassing, and then for the generational, you know, the new generation is just so plugged in, so we're just concerned, will they burn out early? You know, because they're always on, so, you know, so, yeah.
I was at an event last week where the man facilitating the conference made everybody take their devices, their phones, their laptops, and then push them to the center of the table. Have you seen this done before? This was brilliant. You guys have, yeah. And so everybody put their devices at the center of the table, and then he didn't say anything other than he just started talking. It was really brilliant. And so what he did is about 10 minutes later, he called the question. He said, now how many of you for the last 10 minutes have just felt uncomfortable because of something? I want you to think about what that feeling is and why you're feeling that, because it's probably to do with the fact that you're not constantly being barraged with information and you were focused on me, but then there's something like, why am I not being distracted right now? It's in the back of your head. So I appreciate what you were saying about the generational piece and our kids these days and what the culture they're growing up in. Think about this for a second. We're gonna do one more exercise. This is a pretty propitious moment in healthcare. Okay, we got a lot of disagreements when it comes to policies on the Hill. Okay, we've got some gridlock. Maybe that's the understatement of the year right now in DC. But we have a moment to do something meaningful to advance health in this country. And one of the things that we really want to try and emphasize as an organization and want to work on with you is that if we just do some of the things that we know to be effective for a disease, chronic disease management, pick on that, or we just do like the latest, greatest evidence-based program, wellness program, without taking into account some of these other broader facets of health, like the vital conditions that we talked about briefly, are we missing an opportunity? And I love what you all kind of all reflected here, because each one of you in your own special way, you got bigger than just the concept of disease or, you know, a healthy workforce. You got bigger. And I think that's important, but it also requires us to focus. And so that's what we're gonna do now with this next step. So as I said at the beginning, one of our goals here is to specifically learn from your perspective what you all are doing in this space, but also not just to learn a little bit more about what you're doing to advance well-being, but what are your aspirations? What are some of the, you know, opportunities that you might have beyond tomorrow to think more broadly about advancing well-being? And again, going back to our intergenerational piece. So the way that we frame this up is pretty basic. We could think about health and well-being in a couple of different ways. And so again, not to lecture here, it's not a presentation. There was the comment that was made around the individual aspect here, the personal responsibility. Okay, what do we as individuals do? Okay, there's definitely an inevitability that we'll have to address that, okay, because we all do have a role. Come on in. So what do we as individuals do to advance our own health? What do you as an individual do to advance your health? But then there's also this piece around the broader community. Now, this could be your community of your employer. It could be the, you know, employers that you're working with. It could be your employees. It could be your block, your neighborhood. Think about it in those two different ways, because there's always going to be something at the end of the day that you want to do to advance your own health and well-being. And we want you to think about that in the context of you, because you'll have your own personal stuff to say here in just a second. But we also, because of who you represent, want you to talk a little bit more about the broader community and who you as an organization or an employer, as I said, what you can do to influence well-being. So here's the two questions. Let me see if I can frame this up. Where are you and your organization having success building vital conditions for well-being? What's working and why? And just as a reminder, the vital conditions, the seven that are on your table, are pretty big. And if you look at them, to look at yours, housing. Okay, I was at an event last week in Phoenix, and I will tell you, we had an individual that said, if I could invest in one thing to advance the overall health and well-being of my employees, what would that be? And you know, they asked a line of people, and I want you to think about it, because it's actually an interesting question. And it got to the last person, and they said, housing. We live in an urban corridor where nobody can afford to actually live near where they work, And so if we could get people to live closer to work, they wouldn't have to commute as far, they wouldn't be as stressed out, they blah, 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 you know the game. So housing is something that we should invest in. Now that was really kind of a strange little curveball considering the group that we were talking with, because you wouldn't think of an employer automatically just investing in housing for their employees, but yet that was something that was brought up. That is one of the vital conditions, and we know this. If you don't have stable housing and security, the fact, I mean, if you show up at work, you're probably not gonna be your best. Okay, if you don't have the ability to receive education and lifelong learning and feel fulfilled in your pursuits for knowledge, you're probably not gonna do your best job when you show up, okay? Because you just, there's something missing for you. So these vital conditions, each of them, you could probably spend about an hour or a day or a year talking about, because there's a lot there. But what we want you to do is to think about ways that you and you or your organization, sorry, I stole this from you, are working in these spaces. Tell us a little bit about when you go back home and you're talking to your friends and your colleagues about this conference or what you're doing, how might you describe some of the ways that you are approaching these vital conditions? And if the answer is we're not, that's okay too. We want to hear what are some of the more progressive ways that you're pursuing this. So that's big question number one, and we're going to break out and talk about that. Question number two is, what are the big opportunities to realize intergenerational well-being? And so that's a lot trickier. And I realize that that could take a lot of time too. But are there things that you could put into place now in your respective organizations that could have an intergenerational impact? It blows my mind. Yeah, it blows my mind to even think about this, because what happens if there's a new policy that you put into place that allows for, I'm making this up, this is not a good one, that families to do something different with their kids. It's a child, not a tax credit, but it's something that benefits child education, okay? Well, right there, you've done something that's gonna have an intergenerational impact, because it's not your direct employee that you're impacting, it's their families. Now, we do this all the time with benefits, but that ripple effect of giving the kid an educational opportunity is going to enhance their life. So they're gonna have more exposure to opportunity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I realize that there's 1,000 different examples that we can give here, but you get the point. We don't know what the best examples are here. We don't know who's doing, that's why we're talking to you, who's doing this well right now in the country. But we have an assumption that if it is being done, it's probably gonna be in rooms like this, and you're gonna say, well, we actually just started this really cool pilot program in Rhode Island where we're now addressing, you know, childhood tax credits for whatever. I don't know where that one came from, but you get it. Okay, so we're gonna take about 10 minutes, which was not a ton of time because we only have about 20 more minutes. And I want you to do the same thing you just did around definitions. Talk about these questions, and if you have additional clarifying questions, ask them now. But this is not meant to be a refined, like, here's the three things we want to hear from you. We just want you to talk to each other and give us some ideas on what are you doing within your organizations to advance well-being. Okay, you got it? Sound okay? Go. Okay, it is Thursday morning at Central Time Zone, 8:05, and you guys are having like an amazingly robust discussion. And I don't want to stop you, but I need to stop you because we only have about 10 more minutes left and I want to get some information from you. So I'm just going to walk around the room and look at people. I'm coming back. Oh, see? Good. So my previous boss had a chime, and he would hit it at events like this, and it had this beautiful like 10-second cadence to it, so it would ring out, And you could hit the chime and it would ring out and it would allow people to finish their paragraphs. We should get one of those, Mike. Ding, ding, ding. That's not as zen-like. Okay, we're going to start here again just because they are on fire this morning. And okay, tell us what you learned.
So our group talked about just what are organizations doing to build success for vital conditions of well-being. We talked about creating kind of flexible work schedules, so allowing people to work from home, work remotely as it fits for them. Some people like to be in the office. We talked about just getting input from your employees, starting the conversations so that they feel like they're a part of solutions on how can my company help me be healthier. We talked about certain environmental things, like standing workstations, having them available, encouraging walk-in meetings, but really creating a space where employees feel cared about and connected, and then also providing multiple resources to employees, whether they're company-driven resources or external resources that kind of allow the employee to pick programs and support for what works for them, as well as, of course, you know, thinking about benefit design and working with coalitions that help engage employers and connect them to high-performing healthcare systems. Do you want me to do intergenerational too?
Yeah.
So we didn't do much for intergenerational, but we did talk about how companies can support young workers and even middle-aged workers, any worker, in paying off college debt, helping young families pay and assist with childcare costs, and then, of course, providing resources to employees that are working like in that sandwich generation, taking care of the older parents and as well as their kids.
Thank you. Anything else to add, table?
You made it sound good.
Very well organized. All right, who at this table is gonna?
So we started in a really great place talking about this, and then we kind of got off on a tangent a little later in the conversation. Oh, everything's always relevant and related. But the first, we talked a little bit about the financials. So you'd kind of made up a hypothetical. And actually, Best Buy is working right now. We recently did a big survey of our employee population, asking tons of benefit questions. And although we are a for-profit company, resources are not limited. And so current state, we contribute a match to a 401k, which feels very much one size fits all. Realizing we have 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings, 50-somethings, and 401k match isn't equally valuable to all those different, even though maybe they're not exactly intergenerational, there is some variety there. And so we're looking about how could we change to say you get a match, and that match could go to your choice divided across loan repayment, 401k traditional, 401k Roth, savings account, sidecar savings account, so maybe not even long-term investment, but you need that $500 savings for emergencies, so how do we put it into a sidecar or into a 529? So there you're really getting the intergenerationals, but also kind of depending on where you are in your life cycle, that match is most valuable to you. Now, we can't do and. We're not in a position to match all of those things, but how can we provide more opportunity for choice to meet people where they're at? You know, if it's the emergency savings fund or if it's saving for a new purchasing down payment for a home, like what is your financial situation? And that was kind of a big one that we had talked about. And then the tangent was around caregiving. We were like eager and ready to talk about the caregiving that's coming up, but definitely has a play into some of these lifelong learning, education, the support, the healthy communities. How are we supporting caregivers in their variety of needs? And then the other piece around community that we had talked about was like the walking meetings. And for us at Best Buy, we have a pretty interesting culture around the stairs. That if you're going up one flight of stairs, you take the stairs, not the elevator. Or if you're going down two flights of stairs, again, you take the stairs, not the elevator. So if someone gets in the elevator and pushes the button to go up one, there's almost a negative culture about like, what are you, like why are you going up one floor? Like there's some glares. And so you have to be careful about that though, in that there's a lot of invisible disabilities that might prevent somebody from being able to take the stairs up one flight. So it's a delicate balance on all of this wellness stuff, that you want to be supportive of someone who's interested in tobacco cessation, but you can't, you know, demoralize someone who's maybe not ready yet. You want to encourage people to have walking meetings or encourage people to take the stairs. That's a really great healthy choice. We have numbers and all the steps. But at the same time, if somebody isn't able to take the stairs, you can't make them feel bad about that. That stigma, there's a stigma about taking the stairs or not taking the stairs, so you have to kind of be careful.
Thank you. Wow, I love that. That's beautiful. Okay, how about you?
How about me? Corey from Happify. We had discussed from a larger kind of societal level of what we're doing and what seems to be resonating is planting the seeds that emotional and mental well-being actually fits into all categories of life. So wellness, the way you take care of yourself, if you have a chronic condition, medication adherence, nutrition, exercise, giving folks the tools to actually help themselves, and the idea that you know, life is not static. The way you think and the way you feel is not static. It can be changed at any time in your life. So I think that the seeds are being planted and more we're getting feedback that we understand that and making moves. On the employer side, we talked about how really they are having to look at the person as a whole rather than, hey, here's an employee, we have great benefits, a package, and that's all we're doing. Well, no, now it's about, you know, childcare, and it's about wellness and nutrition and exercise and, that goes along with that. So we think that it's gotten to where there's a lot more involved, and employees are really starting to understand that. From an intergenerational, it was kind of a continuation of the discussion that we were having earlier, is really plugging in a lot of this stuff a lot earlier. As part of a curriculum and growing up with our young people, both mindfulness mentality, but also financial wellness and nutrition and exercise, really having that part of the curriculum from learning age on up, so that they have better tools and are better equipped. I mean, in my mind, I was giving a personal experience. I never heard of any of this stuff when I was growing up. Nothing. My parents were emotional, so we didn't even really discuss emotion at the end of the day. And so I'm just like, I would have said back then, and didn't, I learned though that I did not have the tools per se to really be the person that I wanted to be and feel as good as I could feel. And that could have been, at least I could have been given the tools to be a little better in that arena.
Thank you for that.
We had an amazing discussion. We were talking primarily on the well-being and the intergenerational, housing as well. So Katie with Einstein has implemented some, it just makes me emotional, amazing access where she has food deserts. She has you have farmers markets, a food bank. What was the other one?
A farm share.
So she's bringing the food to them, whereas Jay was mentioning how he went to a conference and it was mentioning the difference between lifespan and health span. And he said, aging isn't a disease. So I thought it was funny too. And so I was like, I never thought of it that way. He says, we can spend 15 years, the last 15 years of our life, trying to manage all the disease we could have taken care of earlier, was the point. I thought that was brilliant. And what was your name?
Rita
had another emotional thing. You're talking about a huge apartment complex where the kids are afraid to go out and exercise. It's not safe. They should be afraid, and basically. So they brought an exercise program, and they quarantined off a little parking lot area, bad choice of words, I couldn't think of a better word, and they are bringing a continuous exercise program to the kids, and I said, I bet it was successful, and she said, tremendously, yes, and I said, is it continuing? Yes. So that's fantastic news. The well-being, and then we talked about how parents have to take a bus in poorer areas, take another bus just so they can go get the foods, but they see that they have an empty cart, so now they know, everyone knows they have money, so they're afraid they're gonna get robbed, and all of these huge burdens. And I was whispering over to Katie, and I'm like, that's the real motivated parents, because the majority of those kids aren't going to get the fruits and vegetables and the whole grains, which is going to give them life. So it was emotional for me. It's what I do for a living. We've got to bring health to these kids, and they have to learn early on, and it's going to prevent disease.
I feel like we're starting a conversation that we want to keep having, because that I'm sure if we gave you all another 15, 20 minutes, we could have more and more wonderful examples like this. So thank you for those.
They always choose the wink link. Whenever I was growing up and we'd have a family discussion, one of my siblings, when everything was all said and done, she'd go, ditto. I'd really like to say ditto. Some words that kind of stuck out to me: culture, organization, policies, create, people, employers, employees, members. What we discussed was kind of the more global piece of this, and how employers and other organizations need to build a culture that empowers their employees and their membership. And you do that by creating policies and then creating the right conditions within those organizations. I'm sorry, your name? Mike brought up that during the dairy piece. Oh, bring it up here. Thank you. Mike's in the dairy piece, and they provide dairy products to certain places across the country to provide that type of service for them. I think that's something that gets into the grassroots of things. So again, just basically, and I think other people may have some other things to say, I think just building that right culture and building those policies and then executing on those is a strong place to start.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the, and again, I think Mike kind of brought it home, again, the whole idea that you have to start where people are at. And out of all of these that we saw here, the one that we kept coming back to was fulfilling the basic needs for health and safety and how important that was. And if you're going to go out into the community and ask people to do things such as volunteer, now for Mike, again, I apologize, I'm making you the poster child here at the table, but the idea was is that through their company, they're all across the country, but they also have adopted a number of organizations and charities that they work with, and it's part of their culture that their organization goes out in and volunteers at those charities. So it's a part of that. And then Bruce also brought up the point that if you're going to go out and ask people to go out in those into those organizations, that you have to make sure you're also paying them a wage so that they feel safe and secure to be able to go out in and do that. So, and that's where we focused.
I just want to add one quick comment, and that is I think organizations that we're seeing having success, they ask their employees what the employees want and need. I think sometimes there's a fear of doing that because there's an expectation that if you ask, then I have to, or if you are the one who's asking, then you have an obligation to provide whatever it is that employees want, but I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to end too, because don't lose sight that sometimes the most powerful interventions we could ever do for our community is just simply to ask someone how they're doing and what is it you need. I'm a policy guy, and I always kind of go to 30,000 feet immediately, but really the most important things are the relationships with the people sitting right next to you right now. I mean, it's not losing sight of the power of presence, the power of just being able to connect and asking your employees, how are you doing? If the answer to that is no, or I'm not doing okay, or I'm terrified to tell you because I don't want to get fired, that culture is toxic. You know this. I got into a little bit of a public fight with a health officer last week on a stage, which is always fun. And And I just call it to question sometimes how our policies reinforce stigma, shame, and this culture of I'm never going to talk to you about anything. Because if I'm a drug-free workplace and I'm having a substance use issue and I bring that to the attention of my employer and then you fire me and I lose the only structure that I had in my life, what do you think happens to me next? That's why every 4 minutes a person dies in this country due to drug, alcohol, and suicide, because we've got some major issues. This is also why we're doing what we're doing with you. This is why this initiative, this signature initiative for us, matters so much. We don't want to create a programmatic solution to any of these cultural issues. That's wrong. That won't change anything meaningfully. Okay. What we do want to do is we want to come up with more thoughtful systems approaches as what you've done today. And so thank you. Your words have been extremely helpful. We got a lot of, hopefully this has been somewhat provocative. You got some good ideas percolating. We don't want you to stop though now. I know we need to stop because we got to get going with the rest of the conference. But on the handout here, there is a QR code, if you're hip enough to know how to use QR codes. We got one of those on there. And we also have a link, which is a pretty basic link. It's a survey. And if you are interested, or dare I say motivated, to complete this survey and give us some more information, I loved some of the case studies that came out of this today. And because we remember who you are, we're probably going to circle back to you anyway. Tell us those. Because we want these to be a part of this responsible roadmap we're creating for creating intergenerational well-being. If we don't have those from your perspective, I feel, my friends, that we're missing a huge, huge, huge opportunity. So there's the link. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Alliance. This has been amazing to be able to spend some time with you all this morning. If you have additional insights or questions, Ashley Hill right here, mob her at the end, give her your card, tell us more information about you. But we thank you for waking up with us and sharing a few minutes.